This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. In 1972, so-called Title IX legislation was created to prevent sex discrimination in the U.S. education in general. In practice, though, it's come to mean gender equality in school sports programs. But nearly 40 years later, that equality is still a struggle. Today, the National Women's Law Center filed complaints against 12 school districts nationwide, alleging that they failed to provide equal athletic opportunities for high school girls. One of those school districts is in Worcester. But the sports equity problem isn't limited to those dozen schools. Here's the co-president of the National Women's Law Center, Marsha Greenberger, at a press conference today.
Nationwide, only 41% of all high school athletes are girls, even though girls make up half the student population. That means that schools are giving girls 1.3 million fewer opportunities than boys to play sports.
That's the situation now. In Title IX's early days, the situation was much worse. Congress passed the legislation in 1972, but it took President Gerald Ford 3 years to sign it into law. A year later, in 1976, Yale, a very wealthy school, still didn't have basic athletic facilities for women. It wasn't until the women's rowing team at Yale publicly protested the lack of female showers that people finally began to take notice. Mary Mazzio is the founder and CEO of a documentary film company called 50 Eggs, and she's the producer of the documentary A Hero for Daisy that chronicles that protest. Mazzio is also a former Olympic rower, and she says the protesters were motivated by how differently male and female rowers were treated.
The women would jump on a bus, go to their boathouse 20 minutes away. They would row in the wind and the rain, and the men would then all shower. They would retire to their luxurious, right, shower rooms. They would shower. They would come out steaming pink. The women would be literally huddled on a bus, waiting for the men to finish all their showers. And, of course, because it was a men's locker room, women were not permitted to shower. Then they would go back to campus. So these were the sort of conditions that, again, Yale had only recently gone co-ed. Right. I don't think Yale as an institution fully understood what that transition would take or make.
So Yale was still largely a male institution and it didn't have any athletic facilities for its female athletes, basically, or nothing up to par with what the men had.
Certainly not for the rowers. And it's interesting because in the course of making this film, I had an opportunity to interview a lot of coaches at Yale. And this was a time when women were not visible athletes. Right. So you had women, and I'll quote Carm Koza, who was a legendary football coach at Yale, fabulously honest and direct. And he said, look, here were women coming to Yale for the first time, and they're in eyeshadow, and they've got a lacrosse stick, and I'm thinking, I need the Yale Bowl for my men. Women hadn't earned the right to be athletes at that point. So I think the transition was very painful for Yale. And again, this was a time in the early 70s where you didn't see women in the weight room, and yet you had women with all this athletic ability. Ironically enough, this is 4 years after Yale, or 4 or 5 years after Yale had started admitting women. The women's rowing team, they were winning every race. Two of the members were destined and became members of the 1976 Olympic team. This was the quality and caliber of some of these female athletes, and yet they couldn't shower even after all the men had showered, because you see, then the men would be late for their, you know, for getting back to dinner or whatever.
So they protested, and this protest got national attention. Why?
They did. And at first, the protest was diplomatic. They tried with diplomatic channels, and the women were told, you know, the wheels of change grind slowly here at Yale. And I think enough was enough for them. Many of them were seniors. Many of them were getting very sick. And they said, we are going to create a demonstration where people understand what it is that we're going through.
They were getting sick because they were so sweaty and cold after practice, and they were actually getting colds because they couldn't shower and warm up.
Yeah, exactly. You'd be rowing in January, and you'd get on an unheated bus and have to wait for every man to shower. And at this point, we had two athletes on that team that were training for the Olympic team. And they said, you know, enough is enough. We need to take a stand. They went to the athletic director's office, and they had Title IX in dripping blue marker on their breasts and their backs.
Bare-chested.
Bare-chested, baby. And they dropped trow, and a stringer for the New York Times was there, and a photographer was there. And so it went around the world. It was in the Paris Tribune. This is in 1976. It's in the Paris Tribune. It is in the New York Times. And Yale alumni started writing in with checks. Get those women a shower. Get those people dressed. And it was remarkable because it was the first shot over the bow in terms of what was Title IX and what did it mean? What is true equality?
So was Yale basically embarrassed into trying to get some more equity for women?
It's funny you say that. Chris Ernst, she is the woman who led this idea at Yale. She became a two-time Olympian, right? She was captain of the Yale rowing team.
And she was the lead protester.
And she was one of the lead, I would call her an instigator. Chris said, embarrassment is a powerful tool. They couldn't. All of a sudden, they could.
Now, you are a former college rower and a former college rowing Olympian.
Yes.
Why did you decide to do this movie? Was it that your rowing interests coincided with this interesting rowing story from history?
Well, I had gone to a women's college. Mount Holyoke College. I was an elite athlete, and yet I had never heard of this story. And I said to myself, how could it be that I went to a women's college and I rode with these people, right, and I've never heard this piece of history? How ridiculous is that? And so it's funny that you asked that because I had these visions of myself directing in Hollywood, like wearing a black leather jacket and dark glasses and just being as hip as they come, right? And P.S., I'm not hip at all. And this story grabbed me, and I said to Chris, I said, Chrissy, you've got to let me do something with this. And she's like, no way, absolutely not.
This is Chris Ernst.
Yes, Chris Ernst. And she's like, no way, absolutely not. It's no big deal. And I just sunk my claws into Chris Ernst, you know, for 6 months. And I said, you've got to let me do it. And fortunately, she was a very, very good friend of mine. So she permitted me the intrusion of telling this story.
Mary Mazzio, why is your film called A Hero for Daisy?
At the time I was making this film, I was pregnant with a little girl, and her name is Daisy. And I felt at the time that the social impediments for women are such that they still are today. You know, if you're leggy and blonde and beautiful, life is going to be a little easier. But it's about being sweaty, having a voice, and I feel that even today the film is relevant, sadly relevant, because it is still very difficult to have a voice as a woman in many, many different venues. And so that's what this film was about, to give her the courage to stand up and have a voice, because she wasn't going to be a leggy blonde with her mother's thighs. And I wanted to feel like she could be the person that she was meant to be.
Mary Mazzio, thanks for coming on Radio Boston.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much, Sasha.
That was Mary Mazzio, documentary filmmaker, former Olympic athlete, and a resident of Wellesley. We're joined now by Jack Sullivan of Commonwealth Magazine and Dana Skinner, who's the athletic director for UMass Lowell. Jack and Dana, thanks to both of you for coming in.
Thank you, Sasha.
Good afternoon.
Jack recently wrote an article titled False Start for Commonwealth Magazine, in which he laid out how schools in Massachusetts are falling short when it comes to Title IX. He also wrote about how schools are trying to comply with the law, and some of those ways are very interesting. And Jack, we're going to get to that. Jack Sullivan, for people who don't know of Title IX or only know it by its name but aren't quite sure what it does, give us the quick primer. What is Title IX?
Title IX basically, and it doesn't say sports in the law, Title IX says that any school that receives federal funds has to guarantee equal access and equal resources for everybody that goes there. Very simple. When it comes to sports, they are required by law to provide opportunities for everybody in proportion to their enrollment. And it breaks down to gender, men and women, although it can go the other way. Women usually are the underrepresented sex.
Are we talking mostly about state schools because they're the ones most likely to get taxpayer money?
No, it's actually just about every college, because Pell Grants and student loans, federal guaranteed student loans, are considered federal monies as well.
And as you said, and I didn't know this until I read your article, Title IX does not just apply to sports, but it's become synonymous with sports. Why did that happen? Was that where the biggest gender inequities were?
I think so. It's a combination of, it's not only the most noticeable gender equities, but also the ones that are most easily governed. You know, they can take a look at it. Dana and I were talking about this prior to coming in, that there are guidelines that are set out now for sports because they can be more easily regulated than trying to say this classroom needs X amount of women and X amount of men and X amount of resources.
So you looked at how schools in Massachusetts are doing when it comes to whether they're complying with Title IX. What did you find?
I found pretty much the way it is around the country. They weren't in compliance. If you take it at its base, which is proportionality and two other prongs that it goes by, but by their own numbers, they are not giving equal opportunity and equal access to women within their proportions. It's not in a devious manner or in a maltreatment manner. It's just it's the way it has evolved, and there's no pressure on them to do it.
And when we say proportionality, because I have a feeling we might be using that word a lot, we're basically saying whatever the proportion of men and women are should be the same proportion of how your sports funding and resources break down.
In general, yeah.
Dana Skinner, you are the athletic director at UMass Lowell, so you are, I would imagine a large part of your job deals with trying to make sure the school is in Title IX compliance or trying to get there.
Yes.
Is that difficult?
It is. I think Jack's article provided some good information, but there's also a lot of schools out there that are working hard at it. Part of the problem, Sasha, is the starting point, as I was saying to Jack earlier. You know, UMass Lowell came together. There's been a couple of mergers through the years, but it started off as Lowell Tech. Lowell Tech was predominantly an engineering school for men. The facility that we now have, 1967, it was built, had two shower heads for women. So we've been trying to retrofit that facility during a time, obviously, of declining revenues to public institutions. So I don't disagree with Jack. I think I'm quoted in the article, and I think you do have to be honest about where you are. You have to do a thorough assessment, where are you at, and then you develop a game plan to move forward. But it's the starting point sometimes has been a challenge. It certainly has been for our school.
Listeners, we're talking about Title IX. This is the federal law that requires any educational institution that gets federal or taxpayer money to treat men and women equally. We most often hear about Title IX related to sports. We want to know if you think that female athletes at your high school or your college or your kids' high school or college are getting fair treatment, and whether Title IX has achieved what it's supposed to do, or if you think that Title IX has had a opposite effect, because we'll be talking later also that some schools end up eliminating men's teams to try to drive up the statistics on how many women's teams or women athletes they have. So, listeners, we want to know what you think about Title IX. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And Radio Boston actually went out and spoke to some BU students recently, students at Boston University, about what they think about Title IX and about gender equality at their school. And let's hear some of those voices.
Hi, my name's Charles, and I'm a sophomore here at BU. I think they did a good job balancing out the number of male teams and female teams. It's just attendance with students is still a little bit more on the males.
Hi, my name is Susie Wyman, and I'm a sophomore. I think that they could send out more press releases and do more PR for the girls' teams. I personally don't even know, like, all of the girls' teams, but I could probably name all of the guys' teams for you.
My name is Whitney Ford. I'm a graduate student here, fifth year track and field athlete. I think there's a ton of resources given to female athletes, but it could be a little bit more equal as far as what sports we have. It's unfortunate that we don't have, a varsity baseball team, varsity lacrosse team. So I think our girls' teams are doing very well, but it's unfortunate that the guys suffer so much and it's so much harder for them to get scholarships.
Those were Boston University students talking about Title IX and whether they think it's created equity in school sports. And those people were interviewed by Jason Breslow, our intern at Radio Boston. Dana Skinner, the athletic director at UMass Lowell, we heard that final student talk about scholarships. And what's interesting is that Title IX doesn't just apply to how many teams you have or your facilities. It's also how you hand out scholarship money. So this is very far-reaching.
And that's part of the proportionality challenge. The opportunities that you provide in scholarships is an important part of it, providing equal funding. That is an important component. It's been a challenge at our school. We have and I guess, Sasha, one of the points I want to make is every school has different circumstances, and I think you could probably all make the case as to why it's more of a challenge than it should be, because it is the law. We need to get into compliance. But certainly at our school, we're a Division II athletic program, and we have Division I ice hockey that competes in Hockey East, and we do not have a women's equivalent, and there are a lot of reasons for it that are out of our control. So,
What kind of reasons that are out of your control?
For example, we did not own our own facility. The hockey team was renting the facility it was in, owned by the city, and the city already had our hockey team and a minor league hockey team in there. So they had no room nor any interest in another hockey program. Now legislation is actually changing at the NCAA where they're trying to prevent schools from elevating programs from one division to the next. So even if our institution found the resources, made the commitment to develop a Division I women's ice hockey program, there may not be an avenue to do that. So some of those things are out of our control. But the point I wanted to make is if you look at all of our Division II men's and women's programs, they're pretty much treated identically, equal across the board. It's that one hockey one that's been a hurdle for us.
Although even if you have the will, Dana Skinner, you can't just snap your fingers and say, all right, we're going to have a team, because you need the funding for the team, the uniforms, the facilities, and you're saying you're still sometimes trying to get those basic things lined up.
Look, if that were not an issue, we'd be in compliance today. The fact of the matter is getting there, we're a public institution. State funding has been decreased for every state organization in the last couple of years during the economic crisis, and we're dealing with that like everybody else is.
I want to go to a listener from South Boston who wants to comment on this, and this is Jeff. And Jeff, what are your thoughts about Title IX?
Hi, Sasha. Thanks for taking my call. I definitely see Title IX as being extremely important. Heal for Daisy, it's led to a lot of opportunities for women. I think a lot of schools were very lazy about implementing it and just cutting some of the smaller men's programs. I mean, men's wrestling is a great example of a sport that's just almost been decimated by, you know, unintended consequences of Title IX. So I was wondering if your guests could bring up, just talk about that and maybe some other men's sports that have...
Jeff, thanks for that. That's an important point. And Jack Sullivan of Commonwealth Magazine, can you talk about that? Why is it that we have seen this opposite effect, which is suddenly Title IX, which is supposed to help female and male sports, suddenly we're losing sports as a result?
Well, one of the ways that they do come into proportionality, and Dana touched on this, is with an economic downturn, it's almost impossible to add things. So if you're out of proportion, if you're not in compliance, and the best way to come into compliance is to cut the other side of it down in order to bring it.
So that drives up numbers in a way artificially.
Not even in a way, absolutely artificially. You know, what it does is it eliminates opportunities. Not only does it not create opportunities for women, it eliminates opportunities for men. But there's one thing, Sasha, and I think we addressed it in the story, is that's somewhat of an urban myth that there has been all of these cuts. I mean, clearly there have been cuts, but one of the things that we found, you know, by looking at a 2008 NCAA report, is that overall there have been a number of men's sports cut at NCAA schools around the country, but they've also been added, so that you have a net gain of 192 teams of men's sports around the country in the past 8 years. So it's not it hasn't been an across-the-board decimation of men's teams.
But we have seen it happen. Dana Skinner,
I can comment on that, because I'm at a school that has made some cuts. We discontinued football and wrestling as well.
And was that related to Title IX?
No, and I think that's an important point, and Jack just touched on it. The landscape has changed in college athletics, and I think oftentimes Title IX gets the blame for these cuts, and I'm not sure that's entirely fair. It's one factor, but consider the fact that when I say the landscape has changed, back when I competed in sports in the late 1970s, and there were no conferences. There was Division I, Division II, Division III. Now every school belongs to a conference, and you're funding a much broader array of sports than you did back then. Number two, nobody had the level of recreational sports programming that we have today. We're all building new recreation centers. The number of women has increased from, I think, in the low 40s back in the 70s to probably, I think, 54% of college campuses. My point is that the landscape has changed, and now you've got to figure out how to construct an intercollegiate athletic program to meet all of those broad interests.
Jack Sullivan, could you also comment on football? Because we've talked about some schools cutting football, but football can also really make Title IX difficult to be in compliance with because tell us why.
Well, incredibly difficult, because you're talking about squads of about 100 people, 80 to 100 people at Division I, Division II, Division III schools. And the cost of a program is more than just about any other program, between equipment and practice facilities and travel. So there is no comparable women's sport that would enable 102 women with that type of resource necessity to be established.
I want to go to another caller. This is Kate from Ipswich. And Kate, what are your thoughts about Title IX?
Back when, hi, Sasha.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
When I was in high school back in the early 70s, Title IX had just been passed, and it made a huge difference in our the female athletes being able to participate in the sports that we, you know, we had pretty much a ragtag team before then. And then as soon as Title IX came through, you know, we got leagues, we got uniforms. I mean, we seriously didn't have any of that stuff. So it's kind of like affirmative action in that it's, or, you know, people with special needs and that you have to make allowances for them in order to get ahead. Maybe at this point it should be looked at again, but I, as far as the football and taking so much of the money, that will probably always happen. But Kate, back in the 70s when I started in high school,
it helped
a
lot.
Huge difference.
Kate, thanks for that. So Dana, what's the overview? Has Title IX done more good than bad, or is it just making your life as an athletic director a huge headache?
Oh, much more good than bad. Anytime you go from 30,000 participants before it started to 160,000 today, that's dramatic, that increase. I watched an interview over the weekend with Pat Summitt, and Pat Summitt, she's the women's basketball coach down at Texas, and she said the first game she ever coached at Texas, they drew 53 fans. Anybody that's watched Texas recently, they outdraw the men on many occasions. So I don't think anybody, any athletic director, there's no colleague of mine that will tell you anything other than the involvement, the increased involvement of the women on campus has been dramatic and significant.
And Jack, very briefly, your take, is this a law that is working or that is not working?
I think it's a law of good intents. I don't think it is working. I think it's working. I don't think that there is sufficient pressure on schools to be in compliance.
Thank you very much to both of you. Jack Sullivan is a reporter at Commonwealth Magazine. He just wrote an article about Title IX. And Dana Skinner is the athletic director at UMass Lowell. Thank you very much to both of you for coming into the studio.
Good to see you.
Thank you, Sasha.